You about ready? This is Marty Ford live on BBSRadio.com from the beautiful basement of downtown Bozo's Bar and Grill and Tonsil Wash Station. Like I said, I am Marty Ford. The name of the show is You About Ready? Ready? R-E-A-D-Y, in case you didn't hear me the first three times. We are on BBS Radio Live, and the name of the show is You About Ready? And this is your weekly 1 hour of power before you shower so you can smell pretty like a flower. Broadcast of You About Ready, and you about ready to accomplish more than you ever thought possible? You about ready to become empowered? You about ready to listen, learn, and laugh? Are you about ready to get this thing going? I hope so, because I am. Last week, once again, I was remiss in giving you the answer to the weekly critical thinking brain buster, because it's important to use your brain to think, because your brain can convince you of a lot of things. I knew guys in the service who were given placebos. I might have been one of them after a procedure, medical procedure, and we were fine. Whether or not it was medicine or aspirin, who knows? But in our head, we were fine, and our bodies and souls and spirits followed. So it's wonderful what the brain and mind can do. And if you're ready to become empowered, it all begins in your head. And when you're critically thinking about the things that you want to do, that enhances the project a whole, and it opens up opportunities that you would never have before because you weren't thinking in a positive, healthy manner. So last week's critical thinking brainbuster was, if I recall, what do you call a nun who sleepwalks? And of course, the answer is a Roman Catholic. She's just roaming around. She's sleepwalking, roaming around, and she's Catholic. Therefore, she's a Roman Catholic. No further explanation needed. This week's Brain Buster, you might need a calculator for it because it's kind of complex. It's a little bit of a math problem, but you must figure out how many seconds there are in a year. How many seconds there are in a year. And with that, we'll move into another weekly irregular portion of the show called Tidbits of Useless Information. We use it every day, hopefully, whether it's indoor or outdoor, and that's the plumbing in the water closet. Bathroom, potty, loo, lavatory, binjo, for whatever else you want to call it out there. But we use it. And did you know that though John Crapper did not invent the toilet, it was invented by Sir John Harrington. John Crapper, though, did invent many related parts to the toilet, one of which was called the ball cock. And I'm not going to go into that, but that's what they call it. I don't even know if we still use it today. But if you do a little research, very easy, one click on Wiki, you can find out another tidbit of useless information, valuable or invaluable as it is. And maybe you can come up with your own vast warehouse and storage facility of useless information, as I do, and spread the word to your world, personal, professional, neighbors, family, etc., and inform them. And you know what? You might get a chuckle. You might get a laugh or two, and you'll feel good about yourself, and perhaps someone else will feel good about themselves. And after all, isn't that what it's all about? To feel good about ourselves. And when you're empowered, you feel good about yourself. And before we get to an example, and I always say that an example is the best explanation you could ever have. I do have a rather involved story about empowerment, and personally, I was involved with it, and I did it for someone else, so I'm going to relate that story in a few minutes. But I want to go over our weekly indulgence. And every week, I think I'm going to run out of them. And I write them down. I say, well, I'll just use a couple and save some for next week. But the more I listen, the more I'm aware, the more I see what's going on out there, the more cliches I come up with to write down in the past, pass on to you, the listening audience. By the way, if you want to call in to bbsradio.com, feel free to do so. Just type in or punch in or call in to 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. You can send me an email at hamp73@gmail.com if you want to talk or discuss or air your feelings or thoughts or emotions, ideas or insight to any of the topics we discuss weekly on the show, and they are many, and they are varied, and they're all filled with a little bit of silliness, because you have to. You have to have some silliness, some humor. When's the last time you laughed? You laughed so hard, tears came out of your eyes. You laughed so hard, your stomach muscles hurt. You laughed so hard, nothing came out when your mouth was wide open, trying to force the air out in laughter. And the upshot of it all is, when you're done with that spell of laughter, that probably your brain is releasing great chemicals to make you feel good about yourself, you can't ever remember what triggered the laughter. I'm sure you were talking with somebody, and somebody said something or had a look on their face, and boom, before you know it, you're on the floor rolling around, gasping for air, laughing so hard. Now, you can't do that all the time, but it's good to have humor in your life. There's not enough of it. And we're just bombarded with misery and struggling, and oh my goodness, wow, what's going on now? Please turn off the news. You don't need another jury case right in front of you on the cable news networks. You don't need to listen to six talking heads screaming at each other while pleading, let me finish, let me get my words in. It's a bad role modeling for kids, and it's just rude behavior that we've almost become accustomed to through the brainwashing of the media out there. So turn it off, get up, get out, get going. Do something healthy for yourself and the people in your world. And that will help you become empowered. So we want to go back to cliches. Cliches that I broadcast over bbsradio.com live Tuesday nights, Eastern Standard Time on You About Ready. That's the name of my show. And I am Marty Ford. Today's cliches that are just overused and overused and overused are the new profanity. That's what I call them. They're the new profanity because they have similarities. Profanity is used to shock people. What are you talking about? Where are you going? Mention of body parts and actions between human beings and so forth. That's all used for shock. Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. Do you believe? I try not to go that way because when everyone's going left, I like to go right and vice versa. If everyone's having a hamburger, I'm going to try to have a hot dog or a spaghetti or something else. You don't want to be a me too in this world. You want a little independence, and you can gain independence through empowerment, and my example is coming up shortly. And it also takes the place of thinking of a more appropriate word or phrase to say. That's why we use profanity, and it's all over, even in our the media, the movies, the internet, so forth and so on, and kids pick up on that stuff, and they get desensitized to it, and they use it, and most of the time they don't even know what they're talking about, especially the younger ones in the younger grades, and it's just sad that they're not being allowed to have their youth and being a kid where they should be playing every day and not taking medication so they can get another paper done for seventh grade history class when they should be at the park playing with their friends, yelling, screaming, laughing, jumping, climbing, letting off that energy, burning up steam, getting rid of hostilities, learning life skills, anger management. Oh, anger management. We have to go to the head jockey. Coping skills, count to 10, squeeze a ball, walk away, whatever it is. The professional experts are teaching our kids when they could be learning these skills out there in the world, experiencing it firsthand. So the first cliche this week is the word huge. That was huge. What a huge play that was. He made a great play. Oh, my goodness. That was huge. A difference maker. A game changer. Blah, 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 blah. The word huge. Most of the time, it's used by guys, as we know, who are both micro and soft. Take a pill and for a four-hour take a pill and have a four-hour point in the same direction, erection, with Herm the Worm, that little one-eyed, ball-headed devil, right? Guys are micro and soft. They're usually the bullies, and they're always talking stuff because they got nothing to back it up, right? So, huge. That's another one. Just add it to the list. Related to that is, are you kidding me? Did you just see that? Yes, I did. I was watching it, and no one's kidding me. It happened. It's right in front of me. And are you kidding me? Another overused and abused and worn-out cliche of the day. Utterances used in response. They are words, but they're more like just sounds that people may like, especially when you're watching a show where someone just finds out that they have a trinket that they thought was worth $10 that they pay a dollar for, and now it's worth $50, and they go, oh, wow, gee, gosh. I mean, those are the responses. If you watch those shows, which I do sometimes with my wife, it's quiet time, to see stuff, old stuff, antique stuff, vintage stuff, garage sale stuff. And some of it has value in history, and it's nice to learn about it a little bit. But the responses by the people who bring this stuff in is like the old Batman shows on TV. Golly gee willikers, Batman, says Robin. Bam! Wow! Gosh! So we have that, those utterances. We gotta get that out of the way. And then, of course, another one to go along with huge is to man up. Yes, you do need the little blue pill if you want to man up for many guys. Again, they're the bullies or the ones taking all those enhancements to their internal system, right? They want to man up. And if you talk to most of the women, a lot of guys have trouble manning up in more ways than one. And, of course, going up with huge, which is what man up wants you to be by taking the little pill for the 4-hour duration. It's probably a misdirection, by the way, because it's perpendicular and it's awkward, I guess. I don't know, and I don't want to know. Anyway, it's called grow a set. Grow a set. Let me tell you, if you have to grow a set, even the little pill won't help you here. So we have a lot of things that are related, right, to the male anatomy that have become part of our spectator lexicon that we listen and we hear off what is often said and so desperately not needed to be heard over and over again. And, of course, there's a couple more that we hear a lot. I haven't heard it too much recently, but a lot of times maybe in business you'll hear it where it becomes, that's a no-brainer, a no-brainer. Well, that's a sad thing to say. It means someone with no brain can do it, or it didn't take much to think about. But it's become overused and a cliche, and we have to find replacements. Get rid of all these cliches, right? And the other one to go with a no-brainer, it's a slam dunk. That's a slam dunk. By the way, basketball season has started, the pros, and no more graceful choreographed ballet will you find than watching professional college and high school basketball, and especially if you go in reverse order, high school, or actually middle school, high school, youth sport, or youth sports, middle school, high school, college, and professional. They are marvelous athletes in top form with probably 0% body fat, probably because they drink skim milk. But it's graceful, and I love basketball. I love all sports. I got in tonight. I just got in about a half an hour ago. I took my shower so I could smell like a flower for your Hour of Power on You About Ready, live on bbsradio.com. And I even scored a basket tonight. And a couple of the old guys, or a lot of the young guys sitting on the sides waiting to get in the next game, even applauded and said, way to go. The old man that I am, 63, with all the players out there, a decade or two or three or four younger than me, cheering me on and giving me an affirmation of the small accomplishment of making a shot. But for me, it's huge. It's a big accomplishment because I don't do it too much. I'd rather pass and let the shooter shoot because that's what they do best. My mindset is not to shoot. I like to do all the little things, as I've done throughout my life. When you do the little things, you'll reap the benefits of the big things. So in basketball, I like to try to rebound, play defense, box out, pick up a loose ball, and all those things that never show up in the highlight film. And every once in a while, sneak in a basket, which is good. The game, we only played a game 7 by ones, so every shot is critical. And if, I know there's always 2 or 3 good shooters on my team, and I don't want to take the ball out of their hands. I'd rather get them the ball. I do the same thing and pick up Sunday soccer, which I play a couple times a month. If I have no basketball skills, I have fewer soccer skills. But the guys are kind to the old and feeble, and they let me play, even if I don't bring the ball. You know, and I have my aches and pains, but being empowered over these many years, I've learned to overcome and compensate. I have my aches and pains, but you know what? The pain of not playing is far greater than any pain I have learned to endure. So that's it for our critical thinking, tidbits of useless information, and our cliches of the week. I do want to bring in the crook of the week, if I can find it here in my notes. The crook of the week is a new segment because there's so much thievery going on out there by people who get themselves in positions of power and leadership by whatever means they need to do it, whatever it takes to get there. And I don't take pleasure in seeing people fall, but it is a disgrace to our culture and society when we have leaders who we entrust with an office of responsibility, especially when there's money involved, and we find that they fail. And that's terrible. because and every day there's somebody new that's falling. And the one I just read about was a U.S. congressman from Arizona got 3 years in prison for public corruption. He was a former three-term Republican in the House. He got a fine of $25,000 in addition, and he had a business partner in the real estate business, and that guy got 18 months. And it's sad that they have to resort to that level of behavior. Whether or not they're paying off debts or promises that they made in their campaign and run for office, but they got caught out there. And he had one guy, 17 felony counts, including wire fraud, conspiracy, extortion, racketeering, money laundering, and making false statements to insurance regulator. And he was acquitted on 15 other charges. So who knows what those are. And it's sad because it takes a long time ago. I learned that good people do stupid things. And this guy's probably a stand-up guy at one time in his life, maybe in middle school. I don't know. But he got caught up in the feeding frenzy of the money and the power that goes with it. Probably the women, too, and all the other things that that go along with so-called success. You know, success is measured in different ways for everybody. And unfortunately, too many people take the negative road to success. They're not using their head. They think, what? I'll never get caught. But they weren't. When they ask him right now, what was going on in your head? You know what they'll respond? I wasn't thinking, or I didn't think I would get caught. They weren't using critical thinking. They didn't have a weekly brain buster. They didn't know that a sleepwalking nun is called a Roman Catholic. Couldn't even get it in their head because their mind is so clouded with the stuff that keeps them from thinking clearly and critically. So keep thinking. Be critical about your thinking. Not critical like those critics who can't make movies but tell you all about the movies that they see, mostly bad, not so much good, and whoever pays them to affirm the movies that they want to make awards out of or give awards at the big ceremonies. We don't know what the truth is. And you know what? I don't recommend restaurants and movies to anyone because I'd feel bad if it didn't turn out right. And that might be a sign of weakness, but you know what? It's a big world. Go out and try it yourself and take a chance. Take a risk. It's only a movie. And probably if you're better off waiting for it to come out, you can get it somewhere at the Redbox or Netflix for a couple bucks instead of paying $12, $14, $18 for the 3D IMAX surround sound movies to go along with the $6 popcorn and $8 soda. I don't know how you do that, but people do it, and it's I guess it's fun. I want to review the definition of multitasking. Multitasking is someone who does a lot of things at the same time. Unfortunately, never none of them any good. They don't do them very well. So multitasking. Watch what you're doing. You know, do what you have to do. Do a little bit more. Go the extra mile. But focus on what is important and necessary and leave the peripheral stuff until the important stuff is done. All right? Make a list. Prioritize. Do what you have to do to get things done. You will become empowered because you'll feel good about yourself because you did it. You know, it's like when you do the little things wherever you live. A lot of people live horribly. Just watch Hoarders, which is like, whoa, people actually live like that? Well, living as a hoarder is really oxymoronic because to most people, that's not living. I think it's done for shock value, and it's probably staged as many of those things are on TV that you see. So don't become that. Become independent. Become empowered. You can do this. You can do it with a little help. You can do it on your own. All right, so my story about empowerment. I got out of the service in 1973, a long time ago. And I wasn't one of these guys who wanted the big onion, as I mentioned before, where you come home and you walk in and all that kind of stuff. Not in the big grand scale because media wasn't big that way. I had a group of guys, about 10 or 12 guys I hung around with for a year and a half overseas, and I was the last to leave. I took them all to the airport because I had access to a Jeep through my job, and for the last 2 weeks, I just hung around and worked a lot and just stayed in the barracks playing cards with basic strangers. But when it was my time to come, actually there was no one none of my crew was there to take me out to the airport, so I got a ride from a guy at work, a local national over there, who taught me a lot about life. But I did want to surprise my family, because at the time, many of the guys who were going home from overseas were looking big parades and barbecue parties and friends coming over and just a big greeting with banners and signs. And I said, you know, I don't want that. That's not who I am. And I tried to talk to these guys. I said, man, just go home. Love your family. They love you. You know, you can have a little social gathering, but, you know, the fanfare and all that, we are the common man. And even though Aaron Copland, in his piece, Fanfare for the Common Man, really promotes it, we are just that. We're the common folk, because the leaders of the country usually don't serve, with the exception of a few, and nor do their offspring. So I made a plan to go home. I flew all night from overseas into California, spent the night at the Air Force base out there, and caught a 10 or 11 o'clock at night nonstop flight, the red eye, I think they called it back then, back to the East Coast. And I got into the city of Philadelphia, where I was born and raised and grew up. I got in about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And it was winter. It was January. I was coming from overseas wearing khakis. I had my duffel bag, my overnight bag, and what they called a garment bag for uniforms that could be on hangers so they wouldn't get creased. I don't know why I did that. I was coming home. Anyway, the upshot was I took a taxi from the airport to the train. I took the train to the bus terminal. I took the bus to where my dad was working at a military base. He was a civilian deputy commander. And back then, there were no big greetings. People wouldn't even look at us back in those days. They would put their newspaper up in front of their face. No one spoke, or even they looked away at me. I was the only one in uniform using the mass transit. But that didn't bother me. I knew I was going home to see my family. And I got to the gate at this Army base where my dad worked. And I checked in. I told them who I was. I had my ID. I was in uniform. Obviously, they knew my dad, and he had told many of the people there. It was a big base at the time. It has since closed. Because in 1976 or 5, Walter Mondale, during the election for Carter, came to the base and said, "We will keep this military installation open." Made a big speech right there. Pop came home from work and said, "Pack your bags, I'm retiring, they're going to shut it down." And sure enough, 3 years later, it was gone. And he was part of the closing team that shut it down. And it was a very sad time to see it all go. But things worked out well for my dad and the family. So I'm at the gate. They call my dad's office. The secretary, who I knew from when we were kids to go there swimming in the summer by taking two buses, answered the phone, and the guard told the secretary that I was there. They sent a Jeep. Boy, did I feel good. I left all my gear at the gate, and the Jeep took me right to the steps of his office. I ran up the steps. I heard people in the back talking in different cubicles and offices. And I went around the corner, and there was my dad sitting in his shirt sleeves, because he never wore his jacket during the day. He was at his desk, head down, doing some work. I turned the corner, peeked in, and said, "Dad!" He said, "My son." Oh, and we had a big embrace. Went over to the mess hall, had breakfast again. Pop gave me the keys to the car, and I went home, all anxious to see Mom. I parked the car, went in the house, because I had the house key, and Mom wasn't home. She had her daily ritual of walking up to the stores to get fresh food for supper and lunch, and to see the folks at the 5 and 10 store, the bakery, and the ladies' dress shop for just social as much as business. Anyway, by the time I went up to the shopping center, I checked out all the stores, Mom wasn't around. So I came home, I parked the car, and I got out of the car, and I saw Mom standing in the door looking like, What's going on? Why is the car home? Is Pop okay? And she saw it was me, and she fell apart. And she had to hold on. We had a little safety bar on that screen door, and she held on to it until I got there. And we hugged and cried forever. And then Pop, we went down to get Pop at work when it was done for the day. And my brother was in town with his wife, and they came over at night. And we had a nice little reunion. So I know most of the guys didn't do that, and And I understand why they do it today, creating onions for people to cry when the servicemen come home. But I'm a little different. You have to move to the beat of a different drummer sometimes, especially in today's world, with so much of the sameness going around. I'm not a proponent of it. I don't oppose it. I just think there's too much of it in our face. I'm happy for the guys when they come home and the women when they come home to reunite with their families, but the public spectacle usually, it's almost become cliche. It's not profane, but it's almost become cliche. So let's move on to the story of empowerment. When I got out of the service, as I said, I got out in January and college didn't start till September, so I had time. Coincidentally enough, a neighbor came over who was a couple years older than me, like my brother's age, and he had started a business of installing floors in people's homes, kitchen floors, bathroom floors, whatever they needed, a new floor, tile, linoleum, and sometimes carpet. Anyway, he said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He said, well, you want to be a pair of hands for me, do some labor? I said, sure. So he said, come over to my house tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I went over at 10. He was just getting up. We got to the job site at 11:30. We did the job. We were done at 1:30. He said, let's have lunch. We had lunch, and he hit a bucket of golf balls, and then he went home. I said, oh, that's good. And he made for the day $100 profit on the job. For golf balls and lunch, he spent about $25, and he paid me, so he didn't have much money left to take home. I think he had $50 or $60. So that went on for a few months, and I said, man, this isn't working right. This guy is a great mechanic. He's skilled. He can do this stuff blind. Nobody can do it like him. So I started to instill some simple business practices, like going to his house at 7 in the morning and waking him up to get started early. Like loading the truck at night before I went home so it'll be ready for tomorrow. Like buying in bulk the majority of the products that we sold. You don't have to do an 80-20 corporate business analysis to know which of your products sells the most. And we kept samples of the floors, and we had four or five of them, and we knew we could get a good price on them, and we bought a whole roll, stored it in his garage, and cut off what we needed when we needed it. So we were starting to get more business, because as we left a customer's home, I would say, hey, listen, why don't you tell your friends that we're here? And I would just give her the phone number. What's the phone number? So we had business cards made up for a few bucks. And that's all the advertising we ever had to do, because word of mouth is your best source of advertising. I learned that when I was 10, 11 years old as a paper boy with my brother. We gave the best customer service. We did that with cutting lawns and shoveling snow and washing cars. We had the whole neighborhood. We always had money as middle school and high school kids. So I used the same simple business practices with this guy, and he became empowered. He was pumped and motivated. He would be up at 6 when I would get there at 7. He'd say, where you been? And we were ready to go. Of course, the first job wasn't until 8:30, because people like to wake up and have a cup of coffee in their house. But we never spent a nickel on advertising, because the word of mouth. We would do neighbor Sally, and she would tell her mother. Her mother would tell her sister. The sister would tell a neighbor, and so on and so on. And we had work 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs a day. And at that time, we were clearing $1,500 to $2,000 a week after all the bills were paid. Those are net dollars in the early 1970s. A lot of cash, a lot of money for doing a simple business. And I expanded the business by going out to what we call retail dealers, stores that sold floor covering, but didn't hire on employees to do the installing. So I would walk in, and we'd introduce ourselves. Sometimes he would come, sometimes he wouldn't. But I would say, hey, man, we install, and we've got references all over the place. Make some phone calls. And when you need an installer, call us. Well, we were getting calls every day from the dealers, the floor covering dealers, where at times we had to put our own work on hold or work till 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, because we always wanted to satisfy the customer, because they always wanted it done when they wanted it done. Most of the time it's not well planned out, these repairs. New houses it is, but for when people decide to upgrade their kitchen, the floor is the last thing they think of, and it's always like, can you do it tomorrow? And we always said yes, right? And with that, we made a lot of money. And I went off to college in September, and I worked for him for about 4 or 5 years, all the way through college, as a matter of fact, until I went my way in the corporate and business world, and eventually moved away from the area, and he continued. I think he had another guy working for him as well. But we did simple little things. This guy became empowered. He became independent by using simple techniques. He never thought he could accomplish as much as he did. And guess what? His wife used to tell us that. Well, you guys are amazing. I never thought this would be any kind of business. I thought we'd make $100 a day and be lucky. We're bringing home $1,500 to $2,000 a week, sometimes a six-day work week, but most of the time five. Early in the morning, late at night. What else are you going to do? Right? I was saving money for school, and he was raising a family and paying a mortgage and wanting to move into a bigger house. And I was just stuffing the money away. I was living at home, enjoying it, because I had been away for 4 years. So the simple things empower you. When you make up your mind that you want to do something, you can do it. You will do it, right? And I want to ask you, I forgot to mention, like, what have you done this week? Did you achieve a goal? Did you set a goal last week and achieve it? Did you lose some weight? Did you cut down on smoking? Did you stop sleeping in? Did you communicate better with people? Did you get your point across? Did you listen to people, right? Did you get out and play? Get some time for yourself to exercise or just be out of the area, out of your domain, whether at work or home. Let your thoughts go, to sit in the park, ride down to a lake or a beach and watch the water or the ducks. Get lost in nature. What did you do for yourself to help yourself become empowered? Did you achieve your goal? Did you make a commitment about achieving your goal that you set? Remember, one at a time, simple goals. And the more success you have, it's like when you eat that fake sugar in those little packets, you know, it sort of leaves an aftertaste and all. I said, wow, that's not real. Then you grab some honey and you put that in your food products and it tastes good. It tastes real. It tastes, wow, that's the real deal. And the more success you have is like the more honey you have, you want more of it. And that's all part of becoming empowered. And it all starts with your thinking and knowing, convincing and persuading yourself that you can do it because it's out there to be done. You don't need the advertised products all over the media that are seen out there to help you. No, you can do it on your own. And the help you need is from the people who love you, who are in your world. They are your support system. And you don't need more than one or two. And you're lucky you have them. Nobody's out there alone. Nobody has to do it alone. And you become empowered. And that's what this is all about. Or part of it's all about. Some of it's still silly. But it's not, silliness is not being, is not about being empowered. It's delicate, it's sensitive, it's important, and you will accomplish more than you ever thought possible, and you will listen, learn, and laugh, and enjoy life, right? And that's what's important. Okay, one thing I want to review, because there's been some crisis in the past few days about the healthcare plan that everyone's shocked about. Today, I read there was an official apology by the officials behind the websites involved with the new healthcare system, an apology saying, I'm sorry. Well, two things happened. One, sorry is a character flaw. Don't describe who you are by saying you're sorry. Sorry doesn't work. You know, a million and some odd people are now without insurance because they got canceled and can't get into your program, right? And sorry, you're looking for forgiveness? Well, forgiveness isn't cutting it here. Why? Because if you're forgiven, guess what? Deep down in your head, you believe you can do it again, and you will. So careful how you dole out forgiveness, because you're really giving permission to people to do it again, and that's not good. So we have crisis in the healthcare system. Who knows when and how and if and how much it'll cost to fix. And when it's fixed, will it ever work? When the reality is, the infrastructure is already there. The infrastructure is already there. And the solution to healthcare is right here on bbsradio.com, Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with me, Marty Ford, on the radio show, You Bout Ready. Call in and let's talk about it. I'm going to give you the solution right now. I've done it three times already, but I think it's time again, because wake up, world. What's going on? Listen. Will someone please listen to me and respond in a favorable way that we can actually do this? It's so simple. It'll work. We just have to work it. This is the plan. Plan to work and work the plan. I have the plan. I worked it out. Now let's work the plan. If you want to call in to talk about it, the number here at bbsradio.com is 888-627-6008. If you want to send me an email about it with a way to respond to you, I will do that. Send me the email at hamp73@gmail.com. Here's how the plan works. We have 300 million people in the country, plus or minus. These are all rough numbers. Let's say 21 years of age is the legal age to gamble. If we lower it to 18, because if we can send you to war at 18, maybe you should be able to gamble on this project. So let's say the guesstimate of people 21 years of age or older is 150 million people. We're going to have a national health care lottery. It's called To Your Health. It's going to give you, all American citizens, health care coverage so you can sleep at night and not worry about getting a letter or a phone call from the insurance company saying, canceled, you're out, good luck, goodbye. All the money you paid for in the past is now ours, and we've used it, and maybe some of it's gone. We'll have another crisis to bail out, like Wall Street and the auto industry and the banking industry and real estate and mortgages and whatever else is bailed. The corporations holding up government for ransoms, because if you don't bail us out, we're going to have hundreds of thousands of people unemployment, so you're going to pay me one way or the other. And it's a form of ransom and extortion, I guess. Anyway, we're going to have a national lottery. To Your Health, it's called. So everyone gets national health care, fully covered the way you have it now, right, with the doctors of your choice, no pre-existing conditions and all that other kind of stuff. We're going to make it simple. You don't feel good? Go to the doctor, right? And the doctors will get paid. We're going to limit the bet to $10 per person per week, which comes out to $520 a year. 520 times 150 million people comes out to a gross income of $78 billion a year. We're going to take off 15% for expenses. That's a little high because, you know, overhead can be a bit cumbersome and expensive, especially if you're like the Girl Scouts and you have your offices on Park Avenue sending out these little kids to sell cookies, and the Girl Scout troop only gets maybe a small fraction of what is collected. So the offices on Park Avenue can, and the people in there can live high off the hog and go to theater shows and have limousines and fancy offices with artwork and all the accompanying accoutrements there. So we'll have expenses of about 15%. I'd like to put the office in the middle of the country or in a place that needs it, maybe Detroit, where the labor pool is there, hopefully, and available space is there, office space at a reasonable rate so the owner can make money. Give a home to the National Healthcare Office. So the 15% expenses comes to $11.7 billion. So that's a net income of $66.3 billion. But here's the kicker: we're going to give away $25 million every week, guaranteed. Give it away. If there's one winner, that person gets all the $25 million. And we're going to, if there's two or three or none or six out of six on the lottery numbers, those winners get it. We get it all out. We're going to divvy it up down to, you get one number, you get a few bucks, as some lotteries have right now. There is a lot of models out there that can be used for the national lottery. All we need is some smart 15-year-old techie to put it together for us. So we're going to give away $25 million every week guaranteed. So the first year payout is $1.3 billion we're giving out as prize money. So if you subtract that from the net income of $66.3 billion, now we have a first year total net income of $65 billion. After the 10 to 15% expenses, or what did I say? 10 to 15? No, after the 15% expenses, which we hope we can reduce, and after the $1.3 billion payout in lottery prizes. We're going to register online, keep it simple. And again, we're going to get some high school kids, or actually maybe middle school kids, and maybe a couple college kids, to put the website together, because we don't want grown-ups doing it, because they're going to screw it all up. They have too much information and don't know how to use any of it. So we'll get the youth, the generation of experts in this world of technology. We'll put that together, and you can it's going to be a subscription registration, and you can register for 1, 5, 10, 15, 20, or 25 years, depending on what you want to do. And the more years people register for, the bigger the income is. Now, with a modest 2 to 3% investment return, the revenues will steadily increase year by year by year. Because 2 or 3% on $65 billion, I think, is a lot of money. I'm not that smart. And it'll just churn and churn and churn. And the money will be there to pay the doctors. And more importantly, the doctors will be there to provide national health care for everyone. We have to put in some more protections for the doctors for malpractice. So we need some young lawyers out there. We don't want the old experts, because they screwed it up over the years by making things so convoluted that no one understands what the heck's going on. Sort of like what's happening now with the healthcare situation. Again, we'll use a similar model. That is what's being used in the various lotteries throughout the country, and we'll put it all together. And it's simple. Now, all winning prize money is distributed in lump sum payouts. If you're the one winner with 6 out of 6, the only one to get the $25 million, that's what you get, $25 million lump sum. No discounts for cash, right? You're taking it all, you win it, you get it. And everybody's winnings are like that. All winning money, here's a big one. All winning money is tax-free. Tax-free, man. Change the law. Make it happen. It'll work. People will drive, you'll drive the numbers right up. It'll be explosive. It'll be another cliche. It'll be amazing, right? One of the cliches that I hate. That's what it'll be. So all the prize money is tax-free. And all the winning prize money is distributed via electronic mail direct deposit. So, folks, you got to get a bank account with a routing number and all that stuff, so your money can go right into your account, and you can look at online, or you can call the bank or visit the bank and see what you're winning every week. Hopefully you'll win every week. And on a weekly basis, the National Lottery is going to be drawn Wednesday nights at 10 p.m., right in the middle of the week. You know, the old hump day, another worn-out cliche. We're going to have to your health day, right? So everybody gets health care so you can sleep at night, not have to worry, right? And that's what we want to do. We want to take away worry. We're the greatest nation in the country, in the world, right? We should be able to do this. It's simple. The infrastructure, by the way, is already there. And it wasn't created today or this year or in the past 5 years. It was created 40 or 50 years ago. It's called Medicare, Medicaid, maybe even longer ago. I don't know, right? I forget. I think Roosevelt did it, right? Medicare, Medicaid. The infrastructure is there. Let's bring in some youth, some creative minds, and purge it. Get rid of the dead beats and the dead weight and clean it up. Get rid of the bribes, graft, and corruption, which probably accounts for 30 to 40 or more percent of the total payout. Get rid of those folks and prevent them from ever participating in any form of government business. And even the politicians who don't get reelected and have to find sources of income, just go to FedBizOps, look up what the government puts out on bid, and find out who's winning all these things. It's probably a lot of people we're supporting who didn't win re-election or couldn't get put on board. On board is another cliche, sorry, couldn't become part of a team that is in power right now. So they form companies with their cousins and sister-in-laws as directors and executives, and they win government contracts. A lot of them are no bid as well. But that's another thing. Let's talk about national health care, because I just did. Very simply explained. I know I took time to explain it and to go over it and to define it. And simple as it is, it will work. And all we need is people of influence and power and importance in the right place to make it happen. And we don't have to put up with incompetence. We don't have to people saying, sorry, right? Can you imagine being one of the people who gets that? I think there's 1.5 million so far who are getting canceled. And these leaders down there say, oh, we're sorry, you can't get health care. God forbid, what happens, man? What are you going to do? And you'll go on the government dole and become part of the entitlement process. That's another story. But anyway, let's not be sorry. Let's be active. Let's be empowered. Let's empower our country. And it takes one step at a time. Certainly we've crawled. We've been held. We've been nurtured. We've crawled. We've walked. We've run. Now we need to be guided. And we need the youth of America to do it. Let's not be afraid of the youth, as they were. Usually they have the right things to say. They just need a little bit of direction to lead them away into the future and guiding us and providing for us, the old folks, who need them. Because, you know, we're running out of steam. I don't want to have to worry about it. I want to be able to play basketball and soccer and visit my kids and go out with my wife and not have to worry about all this stuff. And we shouldn't have to. We're a strong nation. We're a valuable nation. We have a lot to offer. We do a lot of great things. If you don't think so, just drive the highways that Eisenhower gave us, the interstates, and see all the construction that's going on, forgetting what goes on behind the scenes to get those contracts awarded to the same contractor over and over again. But maybe the guy is good, or maybe he knows how to do business. And doing business has a variety of ways to be accomplished. And we just hope that people are honest, fair, and do a good job and not create another Towering Inferno situation like that movie by cutting costs and cutting corners to save the dollar so you look good. You know, message boards, time countdowns and count-ups have taken over the stations I see. The countdown to tip-off, the countdown to the new season, the count-up of the government shutdown. You know, 4 days, 3 hours, 12 minutes, 16 seconds. Now they're starting to appear. The screen is being so filled with scrolls and advertisements that you can't see the whole picture. Even if you go to the wide or the cinema part of your adjustments on your clicker. So much garbage is being put forth out there. Now it's taking up space and it's just a nuisance. But now we have countdowns, countdown to the storm coming, or the one that came a year ago today, right? Which was horrible on the East Coast, and the money still hasn't been forthcoming to many of the people who need it the most, And the Ninth Ward down in New Orleans, as I mentioned before, probably never going to get rebuilt, and that's sad for those folks down there, right? As is parts of Atlantic City that were supposed to be rehabilitated or developed after the casinos went in. I'm somewhat familiar with that community, having spent a lot of time there in the 50s and early 60s, and some of it looks worse now than it did then. So that's a sad thing. Wouldn't you like one time to watch one of those food TV shows and have someone say, oh, let's take a bite of this. And, oh, man, that's awful. What the heck is in that? They never do that. They don't even make a grimace on their face or react. Everything is delicious and tasty. It better be, because that's the way it's staged. The only time you have people who are involved in those kinds of shows are when you're being judged, right? The critics, again, who probably can't do it, are criticizing people whose life work is on the line. And why people put themselves through that torture of standing there in the music, doom, 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 in the background, as the judges make their decision on your future, right? I'm sure much of it is staged and scripted. And although we don't know the outcome, we don't know if they're going to love it or list it. We don't know if the scallops are going to win, or the salmon's going to win, or the petite filet is going to win, nor why should we care? I don't know. But wouldn't you like it one time for someone to bite in and say, man, this is garbage. Throw this out. Give me a hot dog, right? Just like to see it one time. That's the food shows. And actually, if you watch those food shows, they're not very healthy. They're loaded, as I mentioned previously, with all the two most dangerous white powdery substances we have, salt and sugar, and add in the lard, the fat, the cream, the whole milk, the butter, you know, taste and flavor. That's where it comes from. Fat, right? Now, I read something the other day that bacon is good for you. The many uses of bacon. And I like a piece of bacon once in a while, but I'm not going to make it my everyday full course meal. A little bit of something every once in a while is good. But the way they just load everything up and just cook it and rub it and pound it and cook it some more and then just shove it in their face. No one needs to eat a 6-pound burrito. That's not good role modeling for the kids, right? We're destroying them. The images they're getting of bad behavior, rudeness, crudeness, disrespect. No wonder why the kids are all on meds, so they can do another paper in history class when they should be out playing. Remember, get up, get out, get going. Shut it down in your house. Turn off the electricity, right? And get the kids out. They need to be out playing. As I said before, running, jumping, yelling, screaming, hollering, climbing, moving. Maybe all the medicine that they're taking, heavy psychotropics during school, wouldn't be needed. Maybe the behavior and the bad manners and the disrespect that they're showing won't be needed. It won't even be there because the kids are going to burn off that energy. Nothing wrong with that. It's healthy. They don't need another class. They need a half hour outside once, maybe twice a day, or 20 minutes once or twice a day. Something to get them out of those concrete walls with stuff to carry around and micromanage. And, oh, my God, I forgot this marker. And it's the only marker I can use, and I can't use anything else. And I'll be a crisis. And before you know it, it's out of control, and the kid needs meds. Why won't your kid sit still? I don't know. Maybe he needs to be outside playing. He does that when he comes home. He's fine at home. Sits down, does his homework. Is social, respectful, does his chores. Why in school do they act out? I don't know. Maybe because they can get away with it, or maybe they need to be outside. You know, mixed messages. Kids don't like. They don't like when the grown-ups give them mixed messages. Terrible thing, but they get them all the time. So we talked about a lot today. The Republicans, I think, are trying to figure out how to attract the so-called minority diverse vote for the next elections. They did something when they lost the last election to the Democrats, and they say, what do we have to do to attract? Well, first you have to appeal. How about talking to them? They're great communicators. They don't talk to people. They shut them away. They pay them not to vote. They do all kinds of tactics to suppress vote. I'm not that politically savvy. I know nothing. But what I hear about is, you know, they close registration opportunities. They cut the hours of it. They turn people away. I don't know what it is, the forms, the identifications, whatever it is. Well, I don't know if that's the American way or not, to literally cheat people out of their voting right that's in the Constitution. I don't understand that. Why do they do that? Why is that necessary? Let people be people and let them go out and vote. So if the Republicans want to attract that vote, maybe go into the neighborhoods. Maybe go into the towns and villages where these people are who you want to attract, folks. Maybe talk, not even talk to them. How about listening to them? How about making good on things you tell them you're going to do, as opposed to being two-faced and talking out of both sides of your body, right? Usually out the back door, right? Because they don't want to hear that stuff. They've heard it for generations, right? And so if you want somebody to acquiesce to your desires, listen to their needs and their feelings and their emotions and their concerns. And maybe, just maybe, you'll do something. And put away the blazers. Get away from the chauffeur-driven cars. Come up in a pickup truck, right? With jeans and overalls. Act as if, like you're one of the guys, right? Instead of somebody out there with nothing but privacy in your world, like schools and universities and neighborhoods and clubs and little cliques and insider trading opportunities that you guys have out there that we don't, right? Do something for people and you'll get their vote, right? Make good on promises. Be honest, be truthful. It's what we want our kids to do. And if kids watch all the negative stuff that goes on during campaigns, which starts every day, there's stuff out there about it, and they're exposed to the lying, cheating, fraud, scandal, corruption stuff that's out there, is it any wonder they might have a bitter taste? Like, what's the use? Maybe it's all planned so that everybody gives up and lets the bad guys keep winning and keep doing what they do. To us and not with us and for us. It's awful, right? What would happen if Coke and Pepsi and McDonald's and all those big companies didn't advertise? Right? A story I found out about, because I used to sell industrial equipment many years ago, and Coca-Cola was one of my customers, and one of the a couple of corporate guys I was with on a tour of the plant. So I was selling, like I think I said, industrial equipment. I can't remember what I just said. Anyway, it's getting late. They told me that a 1% change in market share. At the time, they told me Coke had like 37% of the market and Pepsi had 34%. And a one-point swing was worth $250 million. So if they went from Coke went from 37 to 38, or Pepsi went from 34 to 35 or something, that's $250 million in increased revenues. No wonder why they can pay popular people, well-known people, celebrities. I think Michael Jackson was the first one to sign a 20 or 30 or whatever million-dollar contract. If you're a gambling man, a person that is, sorry, and you had a chance to get $250 million by just selling your marketing your product, which is well-known worldwide, and you would invest $20 million, $30 million to make $250 or to net $220 or $230. You do it every day. But how much would they lose if they didn't advertise? Are there that many competitors out there? Is shelf space at the market's going to be influenced or reduced? What would really happen if all that money wasn't spent on advertising? Just like the two primary political parties in the country, the Red and the Blue, not the Crips and the Bloods. That's a different gang. Those guys are supposedly illegal. The legal guys who do the same things as the gangs do, only they do it under the power of legalized legal law, whatever it's called, statutes, I guess, send kids off to war instead of the streets. But I forgot where I was going. So if the Republicans and Democrats didn't spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, would people still vote? Would we know who they are? Would all the money that's spent on debates and travel and expenses and hotels and insanity by the media covering it, what if that money was put to use feeding people who go to bed hungry, or providing vaccines for kids so they can go to school who might not otherwise have an opportunity to do that? Now, I know there's programs and all that kind of stuff out there, but when you look at what we waste money on in this country, the wealthiest country in the world with opportunities all over the place, and I love this country, but when you look at the waste that's legal, that they just, and I'm sure the people who have the contracts for the buttons and the posters and the banners and the signs and all are probably somehow related to the people in the know. They're all connected somehow in that incestuous fraternity of Republicans and Democrats and whoever else is involved. If that money could be used for other things, or portions of that money, do you really need to spend $40, $50, $60, $80, $100 million to get elected to a job that pays $500,000? I don't know. I'm not that smart. I don't know enough about money to do that. But let's empower our country, right? And we can start one person at a time, and that's you. Tonight, make a goal. Not a plan, a goal. By this time next week, have your goal accomplished. Not about to be accomplished, but accomplished. What do you want to do? You want to cut down from from a pack to a half a pack of cigarettes a day? Do you want to lose 2 pounds? Do you want to communicate better with your family? Do you have issues in your family that you need to talk about rather than go and paying somebody? Sit down and just say, hey, what's going on in your life? You can do all this stuff because you're empowered. So start out with a small goal, right? Whatever it is. I want to get up at 6 o'clock every day and go for a walk, right? I want to come home from work and before I stuff my face in front of the TV, listening to people scream at me who have really nothing to say, I'm going to take another walk and I'm going to feel good about myself. Try to do that every day, right? Try to do it every day, a little bit every day. It's good. It's like selling. I learned a long time ago, you got to sell every day. You got to fill the pipeline. Because one day you're not going to sell. The pipeline's empty. The phone's not ringing. You have no one to talk to. So every day you eat, sleep, and use the toilet that John Crapper helped invent with his ball cot. You use that stuff every day, hopefully, if things are working well. So why not do something good for yourself every day, right? Why not get rid of a bad habit that you have? Or cut out a bad habit. Maybe you can find yourself some more money. Instead of an $8 pack of cigarettes and a $4 cup of coffee every day, you can have a glass of juice at home and smoke half a pack of cigarettes and wean yourself down. And eventually make up your mind using critical thinking and a little bit of empowerment that you're learning here. Have fun doing it, you can laugh about it. And enjoy life. Make yourself proud of yourself. Make others in your world proud of yourself. And then you know what you're going to do to make even yourself feel even better? You're going to do it for someone else. they're going to say, how'd you do it? You're going to tell them, this is what I did. I took care of the little things. And the little things turned into big things. A snowflake at the top of a mountain, as it rolls down and gathers steam and speed, turns into an avalanche. And it can be a beautiful sight if there's nothing in its way to destroy. And it's just cascading down. Hopefully there's no skiers out there that need to be rescued, and there's no homes or animals in the way. So appreciate the beauty of nature. But that's where it starts, with one little snowflake. And it comes down the hill, and boom, it's a powerful tool. See the word power? It's there. This is Marty Ford on BBSRadio.com, live every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. This is a place where you can listen, learn, and laugh, accomplish more than you ever thought possible. And you can power up your power, because the power is in you.